Titans about to clash here in Toronto.
Oh, man, here we go. I've been waiting for this match all week long, man. This is going to be a fight.
Oh, my God! Colbert be fresh!
Son of a bitch.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Eight Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 471 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, November 27th, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. Hope everybody had a very happy Thanksgiving. Stuffed themselves rotten. Great time to start DDP yoga. Literally on Thanksgiving Day, I decided to get off my ass and actually start the program. Dallas was telling me about it for so long, and it's like, of course I'm going to do it. And of course I never did. But now I'm finally starting to get into it. I want to give it a shot. And of all days to start the program, I chose Thanksgiving Day. So that night I just went to town and completely stuffed myself. So maybe not the best thing to be doing. But hopefully everybody had a great holiday. And this is, of course, the holiday season. And as part of that, we have Black Friday sales all over the place. Our Black Friday sale on Pro Wrestling Tees is still going on. So if you are listening to this earlier in the week, you can hop on there until Tuesday the 29th at noon Eastern. That is when the sale comes to an end. Until then, you can get 20% off everything in our store. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. You can get one shirt. You can get a bunch of shirts. You get 20% off your entire order when you use the coupon code Black Friday. All one word. So you want to put that code in at checkout. Show some love for the podcast. You can head on over there. We've got over 24 shirts in our store. And as an aside, by the way, if you know anybody with who's good with t-shirt designs, I'd like to hear from them. Any and all recommendations are welcome. So you can hit me up on email, thesolomonster@gmail.com. But take advantage of the sale. Show some love for the Sound Off. Also, don't forget, you can still take advantage of our Audible offer. Audibletrial.com/solomonster. Sign up. You can get the service free for 30 days and get one free audiobook, including The Death of WCW, as a lot of you have cashed in on. So that offer is still going on through the end of the year, audibletrial.com/solomonster. And I want to say thank you to everybody who made a PayPal donation, all of our PayPal VIPs. You can always make one. On thesolomonster.com, you'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Jerome You're Going Down Eugenio, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Luck Is For Losers Lance Flint, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, Dream Chaser Chauncey Curry, Massgrave Micah Harshaw, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Montreal Mauler Patrick Pacheco, and DJ No Nickname Needed Gunning. Thank you guys so much for the support. I very much appreciate it. If you missed the Survivor Series Sound Off Extra review that I did, I put it up on the YouTube channel later that night, as I said I would. So you can head on over there, youtube.com/thesolomonster. You can subscribe to the channel, watch the video. And it's a very polarizing show. And I say that because I put a poll up on my Twitter page right after the pay-per-view. And over 4,100 votes. A huge response. These Survivor Series polls, the last couple of years, they've gotten a huge response. People hated last year's show with a passion. And over 4,000 of you voted then. This year was more of a polarizing show. Over 4,000 votes again, with 51% thumbs up, 49% thumbs down. So nearly an even split, a very, very slim win for all the thumbs up supporters. And Brock Lesnar, the world's highest paid job guy. Reno Riggins and Iron Mike Sharp would be proud. People have been pointing out, because if you listen to the review, I was not thrilled with the, shall we say, the brevity of that. And look, I was a big fan of Goldberg squashing guys left and right back in the day, but it's also not 1998 anymore. The point is, I was not happy because, as I said last week, that was the one match, the match, keyword match, that I was looking forward to the most. And people have been pointing out to me that, you know, Salamasa, you did say that WWE should keep the Goldberg-Lesnar match as short as possible. What I said was, it should not go longer than 10 minutes. And technically it didn't. So I guess I'm just going to have to be more specific from now on. I did not have a 90-second match in mind when I said that. That's why I said keep it to 10 minutes or less. And when I saw how much time there was left in the pay-per-view, I'm like, oh my God. So believe me, I'm happy it didn't go the 15 minutes or whatever that you would have expected it to go, because they had so much time left. And I'm also fine, by the way, with them not going to 11 o'clock or 11:15. They've been going overtime with some of these pay-per-views, and Survivor Series was supposed to be a four-hour show. That did not have to be a four-hour show. So I'm not even mad that they went off a little early. But the thing that I think people are failing to understand, there were people who were very respectful and either in the comments on YouTube or on Twitter or emails, they say, oh, I disagree. I thought it was great that it did this, that, and the other. And also, you know, when I did that review, nobody knew that Goldberg had officially signed on to do more matches. Obviously, that changes things a little bit. I can understand, on the one hand, why they would have wanted to save a full match for later on. So I get that now. But there were also people who just couldn't wrap their head around how could you hate that? You're a terrible person. You're a terrible wrestling fan. I always love the people who go, why can't you just enjoy it? You know why? Because these are the same people who will piss, bitch, and moan about 5 million other things. But when somebody disagrees with them or is upset about something, oh, you're being a mark. You're being this. You're being that. And it just actually makes me laugh. I find that very amusing, especially when the people who complain about the people who complain don't realize that they themselves are complaining. But anyway, the thing I think people are failing to understand is this. Why I was upset when the pay-per-view ended, as a lot of people were, is that I wanted to see a fight. Right? In fact, the exact words I used on the podcast last week were, two big bulls beating the piss out of each other. That's exactly what I said. It's the whole, for me, it's the whole fight versus squash thing. I was itching for a fight, and that's not what we got. And now we know why. Pro Wrestling Sheet originally broke the news that the reason for the finish was that Goldberg had signed on to continue with WWE, at least through the Royal Rumble at the Alamo Dome, and likely WrestleMania. On Raw, Goldberg came out. He announced that he will be in the Royal Rumble match. This will be his second one. The last one he did was in 2004. That was the one where he murdered poor Nunzio with a spear, which I think is probably still the greatest spear, or the most devastating spear that I've ever seen him deliver. I still say one of the coolest spears he's ever given was the one to Raven in their match on Nitro. That's why I included their match in my WCW countdown. The place, you could literally see everybody rise from their seats at the exact moment when he hit that spear on Raven. A match that went longer even than this one. But he came out, he said Stephanie McMahon backstage after the event said to him, you know, hey, do you think you got one last championship run left in you? And Goldberg agreed. He said, you bet your ass I do. And he is aiming for the WWE Universal, I guess, championship. Aiming for that WrestleMania main event spot. Clearly something is going to happen with him and Brock at the Rumble to necessitate a rematch between them at Mania. Likely with, Brock may screw Goldberg out of a Rumble win or something. It has to happen that way because otherwise there's no reason for these two to have another match. I mean, think about it. Goldberg is now... He's now 2-0. He has beaten this man twice in decisive fashion. Once in a long match and once in a squash. Although I guess you could always just have Brock show up on the TV and tell Goldberg, you know, I don't give a shit about your kids, and grab his son and threaten to suplex him until Goldberg accepts his challenge. You know, I mean, Goldberg's kid has been getting more TV time lately than Neville has. I mean, why not make him work for it? Now, if you remember back in that Rumble match in 04, what happened? Lesnar ran in. I think that was the show where he wrestled Bob Holly for the title in the opening match. But Lesnar ran in, gave Goldberg an F5, and cost him the match. Now, they could literally do the same exact thing. They could recycle the exact same sequence here. But to me, that wouldn't be terribly creative. Now, would it? I wouldn't even have Heyman announce that Brock is going to be in the Rumble, and I assume he's going to be in the Rumble. I mean, they haven't announced it yet, but I'd bet the farm that Brock Lesnar will be in the Rumble match. I wouldn't even have Heyman come out on TV in the next few weeks and announce it. I would save him as a surprise. But not do it the way they did in 04, where he just does a run-in. I would put Brock Lesnar in the Royal Rumble match as a surprise entrant on the Raw side. You know, you figure both brands will have one or two surprises. They each get 15 picks. I guess that's how it's going to work. And Brock could be one of those surprise entries. You know, you already have Goldberg announced for the Rumble match. That's a big enough draw. You figure Undertaker, there's a chance he may be on the card in some way. You don't really need to advertise Lesnar to boost this show. This is going to be a big show no matter what. You got the Alamo Dome. You got all these stars from Raw and SmackDown. It's a dual brand show. This is one of those rare times where I know, you know, you use Brock as like a box office draw, but this time you don't really have to. And we don't even have to really hear from him. Goldberg enters. He starts killing dudes. He starts eliminating people. A few minutes later, the buzzer hits. His music hits. Out comes the Beast. You know, Raw's secret weapon in the Rumble match. But that's what I would do. I would save him as a surprise entrant for the inevitable showdown with Goldberg. And then they go at it. Just briefly. You don't want to give away too much. And you could then have them eliminate each other. They can brawl to the back. They can be separated by people. And from there, you set the match up at WrestleMania. Because Lesnar has essentially taken away from Goldberg what he had wanted to do, which is win the Rumble and go on to challenge for the championship. So that's what I would do. Now, I'm shocked. I have to say this. You know, I look at what happened at the Survivor Series show, and I'm shocked at how strong they have booked Goldberg since bringing him back. Especially, you know, with him being a WCW guy. You know, he was never really one of their... Not only was he never really one of their guys, he didn't even leave on the best of terms. It's like they didn't even like each other when he left the company, whatever it was, 12 years ago. And WWE's track record with WCW guys is not the most sterling. You know, again, his first run went so well that he and the company were on bad terms for over a decade when it was over. And so I never expected this. I mean, even him coming back, I don't know that I ever expected it, but that he would be booked so strongly, and he's basically the top guy in the entire company. He's their biggest star. But I look at that. I look at the booking of Goldberg and the booking, at least up until last Sunday, of Brock Lesnar, and how weak it makes their current roster look by comparison. They all look like a bunch of weaklings underneath these two guys. Now, I know you can't book everybody like that. I'm not saying that. But this is a company that has really struggled to get new faces over. I mean, they tried with Roman. The fans rejected it, and it wasn't entirely his fault. They turn Rollins, and the people like him, but there's no one on the roster who feels like that larger-than-life babyface that we always had with Hogan and with Austin and with Rock and with Cena, except Goldberg. Goldberg comes back, and all of a sudden, he's that guy. Believe it or not, I mean, Goldberg is the top babyface in the company in 2016. And, you know, in a way, it's kind of cool, but in another way, it's not. You know, why would be my question. Why is it so hard for them to, you know, find a full-time guy to be the man? For the fans to look at them as the man. Why is this so difficult? Those part-time, you know, guys, the other guys were full-time too that I just mentioned. Hogan was full-time until he wasn't, and so was Austin and Cena until they weren't. So I don't buy that you have to give somebody a part-time deal and keep them off TV. Yeah, when you're not on TV every week, that helps. That helps to keep you real fresh and special. Absolutely. And now, here's a problem that WWE did not have back when they had Hogan and Austin and Rock and Cena early on. They weren't completely overexposed the way they are now. 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, now this show, NXT and that show, and you know, 19 pay-per-views a year, although it looks like they may cut back on that. So you didn't have that problem back then. You need all this content. You have a network. You got to have more and more and more, bigger, 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 four-man announce teams. It's ridiculous. So there is that. You didn't have that problem back then. But still, those guys were on TV most weeks, and they were, you know, in the mix and on the road doing house shows and stuff, and they were hot as hell. You mean to tell me after all these years and with all the talented guys they have on this, on both of these rosters, why is it so hard for them to build or to find that one guy who's not just making, you know, two appearances or five appearances a year? Yeah, they've proven that they know how to handle guys like Brock and Goldberg. They've done an incredible job. So why not extend that to one or two younger guys who might actually look competitive in the ring if you put them in the ring with a Brock or if you put them in the ring with a Goldberg? You know, think of who might look competitive in those matches. I mean, you could say Roman, but honestly, look at the current roster and who do you think would look competitive? Like on the same level in the ring with a Brock or with a Goldberg? I mean, some people might say Cena because he's this larger-than-life star. But you'd think of, like, Undertaker. You'd think of guys like that, but that's wrong. That's the complete wrong, you know, train of thought. I look at the roster, it's like, who among the guys in the current roster do you think could be that guy? That's the question I would post to everybody listening right now. Because I'm coming up blank here. Or is there anyone? Maybe they're not there. Maybe they don't exist. Maybe it's someone in NXT that I'm not thinking of. You know, and maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it is a Samoa Joe. At least Samoa Joe looks the part. You could say whatever you want to about Joe and his body type and this and that. Joe looks like a mean, just a mean son of a bitch. You know, the scowl and the way he carries himself, the way he walks to the ring, the music, everything. He at least looks the part. He plays the part well. So maybe it's someone like him. I don't know. Maybe it's someone not under contract to them right now. Maybe it's someone in another promotion. It'd be nice for them, though, I think, to try as hard with others as they do with these two guys. Or maybe, you know what, maybe it's just because they're paying these two guys a shit ton of money. At the end of the day, maybe that's it. Maybe that's what motivates them. Well, we're paying Goldberg however many, and you know it's in the millions. We're paying this guy millions of dollars. We better damn sure make sure that we use him the right way and we don't waste him. Same thing with Brock. Brock, I'm sure, has a sweetheart deal. It's in their best interest not to make him look like a fool, barring what happened last weekend. But obviously they have a longer story in mind here. But I'm curious what you guys think. Because like I said, I'm racking my brain trying to think of who they could try to build around. And if there is anybody on the current roster full-time that they could grab onto and protect and, you know, try to make look strong like they're doing with these two guys. Because they don't need that many. All they need is one, two, you know, couple guys. That's all you need. You know, I mean, you look back at the Attitude Era, you had a lot of guys. You had Austin, Rock, Foley, Undertaker, Triple H. They all were looked at as these top guys. Although really it was just Austin and Rock who were a step above everybody else. They were very fortunate. They had two of them. They had two guys at the same time who were as over and as popular as anybody I've ever seen in my life. All they need is one. Raw last Monday was back in the same building, the Air Canada Centre in Toronto. They had TakeOver, Survivor Series, and Raw three straight nights. I think they were in Ottawa for SmackDown. Although going forward, I think for the big four next year, they're going to do four straight nights in whatever the host city is. I think they're doing that for the Rumble in January. I think, actually that's not true because the Rumble will be in the Alamo Dome. But I think for the other pay-per-views, the non-domed, so for example, I think they're back in Brooklyn next summer for SummerSlam. My understanding is it'll be TakeOver, SummerSlam, Raw, and SmackDown all in the Barclays Center. So they're going to make this like a whole destination thing. It's going to be in one location and they're trying to make it into a big deal. But this was the third straight show in the same building. Peter was at the Air Canada Center for the show. He said the crowd for Raw was very different than the crowd for NXT or Survivor Series. This was a very kid-heavy show on Monday. Lots of 8 to 12-year-olds. Lots of cheers for Roman Reigns, unlike the previous two nights, although that didn't really come across on TV, I didn't think. Most interesting, he said that the arena started to empty out around 10 p.m. during Raw. He said by 10:45, the venue was pretty much half empty. Now, again, I didn't really notice it on TV, but I will say, you know, by that point in the show, I'm kind of barely paying attention. But I, you know, I did notice when Rollins and Owens brawled into the crowd in the main event, place looked pretty full to me. But again, he was there, I wasn't. The Twitter poll, over 1,700, almost 1,800 votes, 62% thumbs up, 38% thumbs down, the best poll for Raw in some time. Show open with the Goldberg announcement that I mentioned earlier. He is officially in the 30-man Royal Rumble match. Stephanie had asked Goldberg backstage after the pay-per-view, you got one more title run left in you? And he said, yes, I do. And this is all eerily similar to The Rock. When The Rock came back in 2012, right, he came back for the match with Cena. He beat John Cena in that match. Then he came out the next night on Raw and he said, one day I will be WWE champion again. And everybody cheered and he delivered. I mean, it took many, many months. It wasn't until the Rumble the following year, but he did in fact win the championship. He followed through on that promise. I don't believe that Goldberg will do the same, but this is all still very eerily similar, I think. There were a few you-screwed-Brett chants in the front row at the very end of the promo. I think, other than the finish of the actual match at Survivor Series, the thing that shocked me the most was how positive the reception was for Goldberg, because I fully expected there to be some, you know, folks in the crowd who were going to boo him or do that very thing. They were going to chant, you-screwed-Brett, you-screwed-Brett, and they didn't. I mean, Survivor Series was completely positive. If there were any boos or dumb chants, they were drowned out. It was exactly the kind of reaction that you would want the guy to get. And I, again, one of the reasons that I thought that it might, he might be in for a long night, even that weekend, Goldberg was doing some sort of Q&A or some kind of session, I think the day before, and there he was answering questions about Bret Hart and kicking him in the head, and he was very apologetic for it, and he said, it's one of the worst moments of my life. And the people kind of gave him these respectful applause for it, but I'm thinking, oh boy. If he's already getting questions about this, this is not a good sign. But to the credit of the crowd in Toronto, they either didn't, you know, the majority of the people there either just didn't remember or they didn't care. It was, look, I mean, it was 17, I think, years ago now that that happened. 99, when he kicked Brett in the head. You know, hey, time heals all wounds, I guess. But this was the first time all weekend that I heard anybody in the crowd with the you screwed Brett, you know, garbage. And thankfully, he just kept talking right over him, and it died out pretty quickly after that, so I was pleasantly surprised by the reaction to Goldberg that whole weekend. New Day retained their tag team titles over Sheamus and Cesaro. Poor Cesaro, he tweeted a photo of the poster that WWE is using to promote its tour of Switzerland, which is coming up next May, and Cesaro, a native of Switzerland, probably the only one in the entire company who can say that, is nowhere to be found on the poster. Yet, Sheamus is on there. Sheamus isn't even the most popular member of their team, and yet he makes the poster while Cesaro doesn't. That's just terrible. So he used a giant swing on Kofi. It looked like about 20 reps, but the fans kept chanting 10 for every rep because that was their thing for the weekend, so who the hell knows. It was a lot, though. Puts him in the sharpshooter. Kofi's reaching for the rope. Sheamus comes in. He gives a bro kick to Big E. And it looks like, wow, these guys might actually change the titles here before New Day has a chance to break the record. Xavier gets up on the apron to blow his trombone, and this distracts the referee who does not see Kofi tapping out, and Cesaro lets go of the hold. He ends up getting rolled up for the pin, so the New Day wins. New Day's been acting a little heelish of late. That'd be interesting if everyone's talking about, oh, when are they going to break up the New Day? How are they going to do it? And be kind of interesting if instead of, you know, the act just getting old or breaking these guys up. And I said before, you don't have to break them up. Somebody sent that question into the mailbag once. How would you break up the New Day? And I don't remember all the little details, but I remember saying that I wouldn't like have them turn on each other. I mean, you could just have a friendly breakup where they all go their separate ways and, you know, Big E can go on a singles run and, you know, they don't have to turn on each other. But it would be kind of interesting if after all this time of people wondering, oh, what are they going to turn on each other and how are they going to break these guys up and they've jumped the shark and this and that, if all they end up doing is turning them heel just as a way to freshen them up, they start cheating more, they start getting more nefarious, they start cutting some of the comedy out. I mean, the comedy is all they have left. I mean, it's what they are. So I don't even know how that would work, but it'd be interesting. Be more interesting than probably what they're doing right now. They're only about a week or two away from breaking Demolition's record. I think it's safe to say that it's going to happen. They'll defend the titles on Raw tomorrow night against Anderson and Gallows, and I think that might be their last challenge before the record is broken. So it may come down to those two guys, Anderson and Gallows. This is it right here. This is their last chance if they want to take those titles off New Day before they break the record. Enzo Amore was locked out of the dressing room, naked, in the hallway for some reason. Thankfully for us on TV, the video distorted his little Enzo the way that Jack Tunney did to Ric Flair's big gold belt back in the day. Although it was fairly obvious that Enzo was not naked unless his cock and balls are some color other than flesh tone. That's one of those little quality control things that someone should probably think about before they do a skit like this. At least have the guy wear something flesh-colored so it doesn't look so obvious. He starts to roam the hallways, clearly not minding the camera that's in front of him. Titus O'Neil walks by and tells him to put some damn clothes on. He then runs into Lana, this infuriated Rusev, who came in later on and wanted to know why Enzo was standing there naked, talking to his wife. Perhaps the most sensible question ever asked on this show. Big Cass finally showed up, told Rusev to calm down. Rusev told Enzo to put some damn clothes on so he can crush him in the ring. Enzo is the only guy who I think could have pulled off a segment like this, so I actually thought this was humorous. Stephanie and Mick Foley met with Sami Zayn backstage, who lost to The Miz at Survivor Series. There could be no greater indignity than that. Foley said there have to be ramifications for failure, which is a lie, because if that were true, there would be ramifications for the people that write this TV show. They're never held accountable. Foley put Sami in a match against Braun Strowman, which, after seeing him nearly kill AJ Styles at the pay-per-view the night before, I would say that is indeed quite the punishment. We had a highlight reel segment, which was probably the highlight of the show, with Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens. I thought that this was just absolute gold. Jericho was very upset over what happened to his list at Survivor Series when Kevin Owens used it as a weapon. Papers flying all over the place. He was there to reveal who he felt was responsible for Team SmackDown beating Team Raw when all of a sudden Kevin Owens, his best friend, came out. He showed highlights Owens did on the obscenely expensive Jericho 6500 now. He pointed out it is no longer the Jericho 5000. It's now the Jericho 6500. And Owens is showing still shots of the night before when Jericho was nearly on the receiving end of a Styles clash. Kevin Owens grabbed the list, came in, used it as a weapon, and saved him. And in doing so, he sacrificed himself for the good of the team because Kevin Owens got himself disqualified when he did that. And Jericho said the list was very important to him. Owen said, I don't care about your stupid list. And they teased not being friends anymore, which did not make the crowd happy. Didn't make me happy either. They chanted no. Jericho was finally about to reveal the name of the person responsible for their loss. And they set this whole thing up to make you think that, you know, he was going to blame Kevin Owens. But then, together, in unison, they each shouted, Roman Reigns! Much to the delight of the fans in Toronto. People loved it. They gave him a yes chant. I think they gave him a yes chant as much because they were just happy they didn't break up, not just because they hate Roman Reigns. But it was probably a little bit of both. And people loved it. It was a great moment. And of course it is. It's always Roman's fault. They both laughed, they hugged each other in one of the most heartwarming moments of the year. Seth Rollins came out, he was ready to cash in on what Stephanie had promised him, which was a shot at the Universal title. I guess that's what she had promised him in secret, in order to get him to agree to be on Team Raw, which is kind of odd, because Stephanie is his boss, and if your boss tells you to do something, you do it. As Joey Styles found out the hard way. So Rollins goes to attack both of them, but Jericho and Owens, they end up double-teaming him and beating him down. So the big dog comes out, Roman Reigns, to ruin all the fun. Mick Foley then announced a Seth Rollins-Kevin Owens championship main event, no DQ for the title, with both Jericho and Roman Reigns banned from ringside. Rusev squashed Enzo for talking to his wife while naked in the hallway. This time Enzo had clothes on. And this was a match that seemed designed to start something between Rusev and Big Cass, so I would assume that we'll get a match between them either this Monday, or maybe they'll save it for Roadblock, which is the next Raw pay-per-view in a few weeks. Braun Strowman murdered Sami Zayn to the point where Mick Foley had to walk out and very calmly tell the referee to just stop the match. Like, that's exactly how he did it. Stop the match. Just stop. And as much as I'm happy for James, I've been one of the few, I feel like I've been one of the few defenders of James Ellsworth. Like, how many times on this podcast did I say, I'm happy for the guy, this is so cool for him, this must be like living a dream, this and that. As happy as I am for James Ellsworth, and I don't hate the guy, him getting this big break that he's been getting on SmackDown and all these main events and these matches with AJ Styles, I can't help but look at what they're doing with Sami Zayn on this show and wonder what he thinks. Seeing Ellsworth wrestling the WWE champion every single week on TV while he's stuck doing what he's doing on Raw. And it's not just what happened this week. Obviously, they're set. I would hope they're setting something up with Sami Zayn and Braun Strowman, a big pay-per-view match, maybe at Roadblock. Maybe Sami will get the big David versus Goliath win in the end. I don't know that he will, because Braun is undefeated since he came back, as far as nobody's been able to pin him or make him submit. I don't know that Sami Zayn is going to be the first person to do that, but hopefully Sami will come back and we'll get his comeuppance and we'll look somewhat strong in this. But it's not just the stuff with Braun. I mean, they've generally done nothing with this guy. And it really kind of started coming off of the match he had with Kevin Owens, I think, back at the pay-per-view Battleground, I guess it would have been, in July, when he and Kevin Owens had one of the best matches all year. Those guys stole the show. They tore the house down. And Kevin Owens obviously went on to bigger and better things. And Sami Zayn has just kind of been in the background. And it's like, all right, well, not everybody can be in the top mix at the same time. Sometimes they have to take turns. But now we're going on, what's it been now, 4 months, 5 months of basically nothing? It's like they just don't know what to do with this guy. But then I look over on SmackDown at what they're doing with Ellsworth, and they're also kind of doing the underdog story there, and it's like, man, there's really no reason that a guy like Sami Zayn could not be in the top mix right now on SmackDown. And clearly that's the place for him to be. I'll be honest with you. I'm not even sure why they ever kept him and Kevin Owens on the same brand. I thought for sure they were going to send one to SmackDown and keep the other one on Raw. And they kept him on the same brand. They've kept him apart. Instead of feuding them again, they're giving them some breathing room, but they don't need to be on the same brand. And Owens seems to be doing just fine on Raw. He's got the title. He's got the thing going on with Jericho. It's one of the highlights of Raw every week. But Sami Zayn deserves better than this, man, because the guy, you know, he's got more to give. I think they're wasting whatever it is that he has, and it's just kind of a shame to watch. But then you got a guy like Neville, who's got all the talent in the world, whatever you may think of his size, he's a talented guy, and he can't even sniff television time lately. Sasha Banks told Charlotte that she wanted her rematch from Hell in a Cell, and I had forgotten that she had even... had a rematch coming to her. That's how much I just must be paying attention to this feud. Charlotte told her that it would happen next week, that being tomorrow night, in Charlotte, where she was born, hence the name. She said she beat Sasha in Sasha's hometown, and now she's going to beat her again, but this time in her own hometown. Now, Sasha has won the championship twice this year alone. Both of her title wins came on Monday Night Raw, not on pay-per-views. And I just hope to God they don't plan on changing it again tomorrow. I think enough is enough. We don't need to see another Raw title win in the same year, within a few months of each other, for Sasha Banks. But I put nothing past them. They would do it just to keep Charlotte unbeaten on pay-per-views. Hey, we'll beat her on Raw. Who cares, as long as she's undefeated on the pay-per-views. They just keep the title on Charlotte. In fact, I say at this point, probably just keep the title on Charlotte until WrestleMania. I mean, one of the things I was hoping for, and I figured they were building to at Mania, was a Sasha-Bailey match. And if they did that match, it would probably only make sense for it to be for the championship. So I suppose between now and then, they could get the belt back on Sasha. You know what? If you're going to do that, do it on a big show. Enough with this Raw nonsense. You know, like, it's been cool. It was a cool moment the night after when the brand split started. They wanted to start it with a bang, so they did a title change. I get that, but... you know, maybe give Sasha, if you're going to put the belt back on her, give her a big win at the Rumble. If you're going to change the title, do it there, and then you can build to Sasha and Bayley at WrestleMania. But I could just as easily see them keeping the title on Charlotte until Mania, and that's fine, but they need, who do you put the title on? I mean, do you just do Charlotte and Sasha at Mania? I guess you could. You know, you can have Charlotte win tomorrow night, get away from this feud for a few months. Let Charlotte run through Bayley. Let Charlotte run through someone else. Come back to the feud with Sasha. Do the match at WrestleMania. have Sasha win the championship there. You could do that. You know, you're always going to have time to do Sasha and Bayley. You could do Sasha Bayley at WrestleMania 34. You know, it doesn't have to be this year. But if it's not Sasha, I don't know who steps up to challenge Charlotte for the title. Maybe when Emma finally, and it's a joke at this point with Emma, we keep seeing these Emelina vignettes and she has yet to come back on TV, but maybe they actually have a big plan for Emma when she comes back. Maybe they build up Emma to the point where she can actually challenge for the title at WrestleMania. Maybe it's Nia Jax, but that would be heel versus heel. I think that would be weird. I'm just saying, I'm thinking ahead to WrestleMania, and if it's not going to be Sasha and it's not going to be Bayley, because it looks like they're going to do Charlotte and Bayley at the next pay-per-view, who is there to challenge Charlotte for the championship? What have they set up? Who else on that Raw women's roster would seem like that person can get a championship match at WrestleMania or win the title at WrestleMania? I mean, the only other person even remotely connected to Charlotte is Dana Brooke, and I just can't even fathom that. I don't even want to think about that. So I'm very curious to see who they set up for Charlotte at WrestleMania if they plan on keeping that title on her. Nia Jax came out and called Sasha Banks overrated. So Nia must be the one behind Beverly's account in our Facebook group. Bayley came out to make the save after they all ganged up on Sasha. This led to a Teddy Long special with Sasha and Bayley taking on Charlotte and Nia. Sasha and Bayley won when Sasha tapped out Charlotte with the Banks statement to set up their match this week. Rich Swann beat TJ Perkins and Noam Dar in a triple threat match to earn a Cruiserweight Championship match against the Brian Kendrick on the debut episode of 205 Live this Tuesday night after SmackDown. That is the premiere date for the new Cruiserweight show. It is upon us. And I'll give my thoughts on the new show next week. I believe the show is supposed to be 45 minutes every week and not the full hour. Now, give me a 45-minute Raw show and I'll be a happy guy. Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins with the WWE Universal Championship. No disqualification in the main event. A wild match. They brawled deep into the crowd and Rollins at one point did a crossbody leap off one of the balconies down onto Owens. They brawled back down to ringside and Rollins threw Owens over the barricade. And as Rollins himself was trying to climb over the barricade, a man wearing a white Sin Cara mask tripped him and tried to attack him. And Rollins ended up ripping the guy's mask off to reveal Chris Jericho, who was banned from ringside. And the fact that Jericho would wear a Sin Cara mask, of all things, was just too perfect for words. It's one of those little things. It's just so perfect. I think Jericho on his podcast actually claimed that it was Sin Cara's idea. Like, they're cool now after their fight. And it was Sin Cara who, you know, gave him the mask or told him to use the mask. It was perfect. So Jericho ended up getting pedigreed on the floor, but Owens grabbed Rollins, delivered an apron powerbomb, and then rolled him in the ring, pinned him, and retained his championship. So a pretty damn good main event to end this episode of Raw. Which leads us into SmackDown Live from Tuesday. Shane McMahon was out first, looking a little slower, walking to the ring after what happened to him at the pay-per-view. Thankfully, he seems to be okay. He came out to announce that he had signed James Ellsworth to a full-time SmackDown contract, but Dean Ambrose, who was out there with them, who was exceptionally irritating on this show, to the point where Shane later kicked him out of the building. Ambrose ended up spoiling the announcement right before Shane could say it. AJ Styles came out and challenged Ellsworth to a ladder match with his new contract hanging above the ring. This was going to be a tune-up for AJ for his TLC match against Dean Ambrose. Shane told Ellsworth, you don't have to do this. You don't have to put your contract on the line. And Ellsworth insisted on it. He said, I want to prove that I belong. So he said, if I win, though, then I want a future WWE Championship match, which AJ agreed to, and Shane made the match. He did this, mind you, despite the fact that Ellsworth was out there wearing a neck brace. Put him in a match. Miz beat Kalisto with the skull-crushing finale after Baron Corbin distracted him. Corbin laid out Kalisto with the End of Days after the match. And while this was going on up on stage, Miz is celebrating with the Intercontinental title. He turns around right into a super kick from Dolph Ziggler. He and Dolph will have a ladder match for the Intercontinental title at the TLC pay-per-view. Daniel Bryan confronted Baron Corbin backstage. He was pissed off that Corbin cost SmackDown the Cruiserweight division at Survivor Series by interfering in that Cruiserweight title match. He then put Corbin in a match with a good friend of his, Kane. That was the moment Bryan turned heel for me. Like, I understand you punishing Corbin for what he did, but why punish the fans? What did we do to deserve that? We had tag team turmoil to determine a new number one. And by the way, before I get hate mail, I like Kane, okay? Just back off. It's a joke, but also not a joke, because I don't think Baron Corbin and Kane are going to have matches that are going to light the world on fire, no pun intended. But I like Kane before people jump all over. And I like Big Show, too. My whole thing with Kane and Big Show was they were on TV so often on Raw when that period of time during the Authority stuff. It got to the point of absurdity where I just couldn't take it anymore, and I wanted them to have a quicksand match and just disappear forever. But now that they've been off TV, we haven't seen Big Show in months, and I notice now he's looking slim and trim. He's under 400 pounds for the first time in 20 years. He's looking pretty good, and I know he's had some house show matches with Braun Strowman. Great. Great. That's the perfect role for him. Let him wrestle Braun Strowman in every town, in every city, as long as I don't have to be subjected to those matches on TV every single week. Tag team turmoil. To determine the new number one contender for the SmackDown Tag Team titles, the Hype Bros beat the Ascension with the Hype Rider. Breezango then beat the Hype Bros. American Alpha joined, and they pinned Breezango. They then beat the Vaudevillains as well. So now, two wins for American Alpha heading into the Usos coming out. And they had a nice little match going on, and they beat the Usos. So seemingly, American Alpha became the number one contenders, thankfully, finally, for the tag team titles, or so we thought, because Bray Wyatt then popped up on the screen to inform them that they would be facing himself and Randy Orton next week to determine the actual number one contenders. And so I suspect that Wyatt and Orton will get the win. They will then win the tag team titles from Heath Slater and Rhino at TLC. That would be my prediction. Backstage, Ambrose showed up dressed up as the Mountie here in Canada, much to the chagrin of Shane McMahon, who was pissed. He thought he had kicked him out of the building. He wanted Ambrose gone. Bryan told Shane, calm down, let me take care of this. You can leave now. And Ambrose then told Bryan that he had a message for AJ Styles, and that is that the Mountie always gets his man. And Bryan tried his best not to corpse on camera, and he nearly failed. Baron Corbin beat Kane in less than a minute, after Kalisto interfered and saved us all. Thank you, Kalisto. You keep doing those lucha things that you do. AJ Styles and James Ellsworth in a ladder match. There's some words that I bet you never thought you would hear if I was doing my 2016 prediction show. With Ellsworth's brand new SmackDown contract literally hanging in the back. The thing about that, actually, now that I think about that, can you imagine if I was doing a prediction show last year and I said, I predict that at some point in 2016, we're going to see a championship match. First of all, we're going to have a brand split, and then we're going to have a championship match on one of those brands between AJ Styles, who is your WWE champion, defending against some guy named James Ellsworth. You would have thought I was crazy, but here we are. Ellsworth comes into this match 2-0 on the WWE champion, and now you can make that 3-0, because guess what happened? Styles was toying with him most of the match. He was still wearing the neck brace, by the way. Apparently, Raw got the medical staff as part of the brand split. Styles had him beat. He was climbing the ladder. He had the tips of his fingers AJ did on the contract, and all of a sudden, Dean Ambrose showed up. He was dressed in what we were told was an Ottawa Senators jersey. Styles climbed down, ended up getting clotheslined out of the ring. Ambrose tried to revive Ellsworth, told him to climb. Meanwhile, Styles caught Ambrose with a phenomenal forearm, knocked him out of the ring. And so AJ's climbing the ladder again, but this time, Ellsworth is up. He tips the ladder over with AJ on it, and AJ's life flashed before my eyes. For the second time in his many nights, AJ Styles nearly died, taking a bump out of the ring. First, Braun Strowman almost killed him at Survivor Series. Here, he took one of the craziest bumps you'll ever see. I don't know how he managed to not break or snap or tear anything on the way down. Somehow he was okay. And when AJ tried to get back inside, Ellsworth gave him no chin music. And when he fell down, Styles got his leg tied up in the bottom ropes. Couldn't get himself free. He was trying to wiggle free, but he couldn't. And so Ellsworth climbs the ladder, he grabs the contract, and James Ellsworth beats AJ Styles for the third straight time, pulling down the contract and earning himself a second opportunity to challenge for the WWE Championship sometime in the future. So here's the thing with the Ellsworth stuff. I said before that I was one of the early advocates for this guy when people were shitting all over him. I said, come on, like it's a feel-good story. I'm happy for the guy. Run with your 15 minutes of fame until you can't run with it anymore. I never expected that this guy was going to be extended a full-time contract. He would be in main events every week. He would be beating the WWE champion. He would be at Survivor Series. Like, it's unbelievable what this has turned into. So originally, I figured, okay, I'm totally cool with this guy being on TV here and there, and then take him off TV, bring him back in the Royal Rumble match, have him come in at number one, have Braun Strowman come in at number two, toy with him, throw him around the ring, goes to eliminate him, but says, no, I want to play with him a little more, like a cat playing with a mouse. And then at some point in the Rumble, somehow Ellsworth survives, like halfway at least through the Rumble match, he ends up eliminating Braun Strowman, you get that big shock elimination like Maven did on The Undertaker many years ago. Like, that was my plan. I didn't conceive of any of the stuff that they're doing with this guy now. So I'll be the first to say that this has gone farther than it should. This is now at the point, see, I'm a big believer, and you guys know this too, that the champion, let alone your top champ, forget like Intercontinental and US, that your champion should not be pinned, should not be losing non-title matches left and right on TV. Unless the point is, it's setting up a championship match. So I don't mind this as much because here he wasn't pinned. It was another fluky win. And it is leading to a championship match. We don't know when, but it's not like it's just some random loss for the champion and now we move on. They made it very clear that if Ellsworth wins, it's you know, going to earn himself a championship match. So at least they explain that. At least this match is going to lead to something, which I like. But he's now beaten AJ Styles three straight times. And I think we've reached the point where enough is enough. I think we've reached the point where it's gotten a little long in the tooth. Again, I'm still happy for the guy. He earned himself a contract. Apparently his t-shirt is selling really well. The people are into him. He's like this modern day underdog. Like, I don't even know who to compare him to. I mean, I want to compare him in a way to the 1-2-3 kid, but the 1-2-3 kid had a hell of a lot more in-ring talent than James Ellsworth does, and had something about him that Ellsworth doesn't have. But Ellsworth is just, he's this guy that, you know, kids and fans I could see getting behind and rallying around. They want to see him win. They want to see him do well. It's a feel-good story. I'm not hating on them for it. I'm just saying we've reached the point now where, okay, this can't go on much longer. You know, like whenever this championship match is going to be, AJ just has to squash this guy and just win in decisive fashion and be done with it. Maybe we can use this to bring out a violent side of AJ Styles that we really haven't seen. Right now, he's the cocky, arrogant heel that we've seen, very much like Kevin Owens on Raw. Maybe they can use this. Maybe this is building to them having AJ do something really evil and really vicious to Ellsworth. As vicious as you can make it on a PG show, what it does remind me of now when I think back is Zach Gowen. And Brock Lesnar was always a monster, and I can't even fathom back in the day if they were going to have Zach Gowen get wins like this every week over Brock Lesnar. I just can't even imagine that. But I vividly remember the episode of SmackDown where they had a match between Gowen and Lesnar, and Lesnar just destroyed this guy. And the kid's mother was sitting at ringside, front row, right by the aisleway. And Lesnar just destroyed him. And he hit him in the head with one of the sickest sounding chair shots I've ever heard. Gowen had the one leg. He took his one good leg and F5'd him into the ring. I mean, he destroyed this kid. And it really made Brock out to be this vicious beast, this monster. And then when Gowen ended up in a wheelchair, I think a week or two later, remember when they had Brock wheel him down, literally throw him down the stairs? I mean, Brock did some pretty vicious stuff. I almost wouldn't mind this if maybe that's kind of what they're getting at here. Because AJ's been made to look like a fool. Ambrose and Ellsworth have made this guy look like a fool. And so if I'm AJ, I'm thinking to my, I'm about ready to snap. And so maybe the point is to get to that championship match and have AJ incapacitate this guy and injure him or put him out somehow, use weapons, whatever. I'd be okay with that because it's okay to show that side of your champion. Prove that this guy's not a joke. You got to start taking this guy seriously. He's the champion and you don't want to fuck with him. So food for thought. I have no idea if that's their plan here, but that could be one direction that they go in with this. But you know, we don't need to see Ellsworth get a fourth and a fifth win over AJ Styles. I think, you know, some people say, oh, is there, they've already jumped the shark on this guy. They can still take this and do something with this and you know, get something productive out of this. But just to have him beating AJ and, you know, week after week after week, it's like, all right, enough already. Look, I still think, and by the way, you can do a situation where AJ destroys Ellsworth. Ellsworth disappears. He reappears a month later as a lackey for AJ Styles. He kind of comes around and he aligns with AJ. The idea that I mentioned a couple of weeks ago here on the podcast, you're going into a TLC pay-per-view next weekend. So I don't know when they're planning on doing this championship match. It could be this week. It could be this Tuesday night that they're going to do a title match between AJ and Ellsworth. But the idea that I pitched a couple of weeks ago was, you could actually take something they did just a few years ago and you can recycle it using different faces. If you think back to TLC in 2012, they had a ladder match, a TLC match between Dolph Ziggler and John Cena. And AJ Lee was obsessed with John Cena. She was at ringside. She was in his corner. And what happened? AJ tipped the ladder over with Cena on it. She turned on him and she ended up aligning with Dolph Ziggler and Dolph won the match. You could literally do the same thing here and then Ellsworth ends up being a lackey for AJ Styles, kind of in the same vein that Ralphus used to be for Chris Jericho in WCW back in the day. So I'd be okay with that too. I mean, Ellsworth is a great babyface. I don't know that they want to squander that by essentially turning him heel. Unless, you know, maybe it's not so much Ellsworth being like, you know, F you, Dean, and he pushes him over, but it's almost like Styles, I don't know, promised him something or intimidated him into being with him, and it's almost like he's his slave now. I mean, look, there's a lot of different ways you can go with this, but him being a lackey for AJ, I think, would be the way to go. And if they're not, then I hope that in the next few weeks, the plan is to just have him absolutely beat the shit out of this guy. So that in the end, it can actually make your champion look stronger coming out of it. Shouldn't that be the point? Shouldn't the point be not to use your champion to get this freaking guy over, but in the end to make your champion look stronger in some way? So either he gets a lackey or, you know, he shows his violent side. It's got to be one or the other, because I don't see what AJ Styles gets out of this if you don't do either one of those things. So speaking of TLC, this is how the card is shaping up thus far. Yes, we have another pay-per-view next weekend, so get ready. We've got Nikki Bella and Carmella in a no disqualification match. We've got Baron Corbin and Kalisto in a chairs match. Still one of the dumbest matches in WWE. Second only to the dreaded stairs match, which thankfully they've retired. Heath Slater and Rhino will challenge either American Alpha or Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, put their tag team titles on the line. Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss for the Women's Championship. The Miz and Dolph Ziggler in a ladder match for the Intercontinental title. And AJ Styles against Dean Ambrose in a TLC match for the WWE World Championship. So that's your card for next weekend. And we'll have predictions on the next podcast as well.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
To follow up on the story I mentioned a couple of weeks back of Steve Corino from ROH doing a stint as a guest coach at the WWE Performance Center and me hoping that they would bring him in and eventually transition him into the color commentary role on NXT to replace Corey Graves, it looks like we may be one step closer to that happening. Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net broke the news that Corino, whose Ring of Honor contract expires at the end of December, will in fact be coming to WWE to work as a full-time trainer for them at the Performance Center. So I am hopeful that at some point he may get a crack at the announce position. Apparently that's not what he's being brought in for, but you know how these things work. And you know, there's no reason he can't coach and do commentary, for, you know, a taped show, once a week, or it's not even, I don't even know if it's that long. You know, they do these tapings every few weeks. I would imagine that it wouldn't be that difficult. I've really enjoyed him and Kevin Kelly on Ring of Honor TV when I've watched them. I haven't had a chance to watch much ROH of late. I want to try to get back into it, but, I've enjoyed the chemistry between them. It's a loss for Ring of Honor. If they're thinking, though, of getting Corey Graves off of that show because of all the other things they have him doing, you know, 3 hours of Raw, the pay-per-views, now he's going to be on 205 Live. You know, if they have somebody waiting in the wings who I think could fill the role quite capably, then you can lighten his workload, take Graves off the show, and slot Carino in there and see how he does. You know, I mean, I'd like to see him get a shot at it. So I think this makes that a little bit more likely. Austin Aries posted a photo on his Twitter, an x-ray photo of his skull, showing a titanium plate that was inserted by his eye during surgery a few weeks ago. Apparently it will be permanent, so he will have a permanent titanium plate lodged in his face as a result of a kick from Shinsuke Nakamura. So I would imagine that'll be a bitch going through airports. NXT this week was filled with video packages from TakeOver, and the few matches they did have were all taped in Toronto before the TakeOver show, so they had the big crowd there. Rich Swann against Kona Reeves. Like Kona Crush. Remember Kona Crush? He used to go, Shaka Bra. That was his big, I don't even know what that means. Probably means like life. I remember when I went to Costa Rica about 6 years ago, and I learned very quickly, I heard people like constantly saying that, pura vida, pura vida. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? It means like to life or something. Yeah, it's like the Jewish saying, l'chaim. So I'm going around now in Costa Rica. I'm like, oh, pura vida, pura vida. And Crush used to go on TV and be like, shaka bra. So I would imagine it probably has a similar kind of connotation. It's like a Hawaiian thing. But this kid, you know, Kona Reeves, this kid has gone through more name changes than Puff Daddy, okay? So his real name is Noah Kikoa. That's his real name, and I think that was actually the ring name he started using. And Noah Kikoa actually sounds pretty cool, right? I mean, that sounds like it could be a wrestling name. And it was at first, and then they rechristened him as Noah Potjes, which is decidedly less cool than Noah Kikoa. Now, the latest name that they're using for him is Kona Reeves. So we'll see if this one sticks. Swan had the match won when the lights went out and Sanity came to the ring. They beat up Swan. They beat out, Discount Kona Crush. And then Eric Young cut a promo about how he tried to do things the way the fans wanted and he got nowhere. And I'm listening to this and I'm like, dude, you wrestled one match. You wrestled a match, I think, against Samoa Joe. In NXT, that's it. What is this nonsense? I tried to do the things that you wanted me to do. It's like, yeah, you made one appearance, you moron. Come on. And you got a great reaction, too. The fans were actually very respectful of Eric Young. He got a better reaction than I thought he would. Why so angry? So after the break, No Way Jose was in the ring to check on Rich Swann, who was still laid out. Sanity started to leave. They started to walk up the aisleway, and Jose got on the mic and challenged EY to come back and, hey, come do the same thing to me. So Eric Young came back. They went at it for a little bit. No bell. No referee. Just a fight. And the rest of Sanity got involved and they laid waste to poor Jose. So next week it's going to be an official match. It'll be No Way Jose against Eric Young on NXT this week coming up. Backstage we see Daria Baronado, formerly of Tough Enough fame, if you remember her from that last season. Warming up, she's got the hood on, she's shadow boxing, she looks like a, she's dressed like an MMA fighter. And actually, I think she is an MMA fighter, or at least she used to be. Daria, if you remember, Daria was the one who came out on the show as a lesbian during that last season of Tough Enough. They kind of made a big deal about her coming out to the world on live TV. That was her. So she was interrupted by Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, who asked if she wanted to be their partner tonight against Aaliyah and Liv Morgan and Ember Moon, which is quite the team. So Daria just gets right up in their face, like really angry, gets up all pissed off that they interrupted her, and she says, I get to beat people up? Sure, why not? And then promptly she went back to shadow boxing. So, actually, I think they said this took place last weekend at TakeOver before the show, which begs the question, why was she backstage shadowboxing in her gear and getting ready for a match that she didn't have? So we had Ember Moon, Aaliyah, and Liv Morgan against Billie Kay, Peyton Royce, and Daria Baronado. Daria, for the limited time she was in there, I thought she looked fine. I thought she looked okay. Need to see more of her. The thing about her, though, and this is the first time I've actually seen her in this, persona, in this mode. I mean, I saw her on Tough Enough and that was it. We haven't seen her on TV yet. The thing, like, she's got the pissed off, angry face down pat. I almost got this impression, like, between the pissed off, angry face and the way she kind of marched down to the ring, it was like she was doing her best Ronda Rousey pre-fight impersonation. So she's got that down pat. Now, if she can actually back that up in the ring, and I'm sure she's, you know, probably very green and inexperienced, but if she can end up backing that up in the ring, I think they could have something with her. Because she looks the part. But the thing is, once the bell rings, and if she's going to be in singles matches, she can't be in there embarrassing herself. So if she can back that up, I think that they can have something in her. So Billy and Peyton, at the end here, they sort of fed her to the wolves at the end. They, you know, Daria was in there. She had gotten beaten up and tagged out. They almost immediately tagged her back in. She clearly wasn't ready to get back in, but she got in anyway. And she ended up eating a top rope stunner from Ember Moon and got pinned. So overall, it was fine. They ended the show with the breaking news that Shinsuke Nakamura will get his rematch for the NXT Championship against Samoa Joe in 2 weeks at the NXT show in Osaka, Japan, just as I suspected when I reviewed the TakeOver show on last week's podcast. That seemed to be the place that made the most sense for the rematch and to change the title back to Nakamura, which I expect them to do. Now, they said in 2 weeks, that's what they said on this show. The match is actually next Saturday. It's December 3rd, so my guess is they're going to tape it and they're going to air the full match on NXT television the week after. But I don't know that for a fact. Maybe they'll just show highlights. That's kind of what they did with Samoa Joe and Finn Balor. Actually, that's exactly what they did. They had that match in Boston. I think it was in Lowell. Actually, it wasn't Boston. It was Lowell, Massachusetts. They didn't show the entire match. They were hyping up, oh, we're going to show you when Samoa Joe beat Balor and won the title. It was just highlights. Being that they're actually promoting this match in advance, I would hope they show the full thing. I think it would be cool to see the full thing. And I would suspect that that would air not this coming Wednesday, but the following Wednesday, just a few days after the match. So, we'll see. Lucha Underground. This week's episode, I have to say, is an example of exactly what I'm talking about. When I say that I have full faith in the writers who put this show together, just like I do with NXT. Right? I say that from time to time. Even when they do things I may not agree with or that I just don't like, I trust that in the end, they will do right by their audience. And they did just that with this week's main event. We had the debut to open the show of the White Rabbit Tribe. We've been hearing about a lot. Paul London, Mala Suerte, played by the former Mr. Cisco, and Saltador, played by the former Sinestro de la Muerte, dressed up in a checkered skin suit. First match in, and they wrestled for the trio's tag team titles against Phoenix, Aerostar, and Drago. Cobra Moon was stalking Drago atop Dario Cueto's office the entire time. Phoenix got the pin on Saltador after about 5 minutes. White Rabbit Tribe not off to a good start here in Lucha Underground. They lose in their first match, a staple of Lucha Underground. Many a person have lost in their debut match on this show. Cobra Moon then cut a promo, an angry promo on Drago, and said that she is his queen. In the back, the Mac finds Sexy Star to congratulate his friend on winning the Lucha Underground Championship. The Mac had the acting skills here of a piece of plywood. And the plywood probably has more acting range than the Mac does. So he wants to be in Sexy Star's corner for her match tonight against Johnny Mundo to counteract his worldwide underground buddies. And she says, no, I have to do this on my own, and I have to prove that my win last week was no fluke. She's going to go it alone. Good. Killshot and Dante Fox. This match kicked all kinds of ass. I can't say enough good things about this match. Best thing on the entire show. Just a ton of action from start to finish. Fox at one point did a dive out to the floor at like a million miles an hour through the ropes that reminded me of the ones that King Cuerno used to do when he would pull the arrow back and he would just shoot himself. Like the best, like the dives in wrestling are so overblown and overplayed. I'm so over them. But if there was one person who I would say, let this guy do dives every week and I would be perfectly happy, it would be King Cuerno, because he does them so fluidly and so quickly and it just looks great. But it also reminded me, I sat there, I'm like, that reminds me of King Cuerno. Hey, wait a minute. What the hell ever happened to King Cuerno? I don't think we've seen him one time this season. So yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I mean, I vaguely remember him being interested in going to WWE, and I don't think they were going to let him. So maybe it was just during a period this was taped where they were either... I mean, I guess there were no negotiations. I mean, if he's under contract for however many seasons, then that's the end of it. So maybe they were at an impasse, and I don't know. I don't know. If that's the case, then I suspect that he'll be back at some point, because I think that he did come back, but I haven't seen him at all. I don't think at all this season. So Killshot hit a Death Valley driver from the top rope onto the apron. That was nuts. And then he followed that up with a double foot stop off the top rope, but that still only got a two count. Killshot went for his one wing angel, but Fox turned it into a cradle, got a near fall out of it. And Fox did a leaping pop. So you got to picture this. So Killshot's up top. And in comes Dante Fox. I almost called him AR Fox. In comes Dante Fox. He does a leaping pop-up C4 to Killshot off the top rope. And then finally, he finishes Killshot with the Fox Catcher. That's the name of his finish. Some of the kickouts in this match, considering the moves these guys were doing, were kind of ridiculous. I mean, like, there were at least two different things in this match where it's like, how did he, come on. You know, like, I used to get that a lot when I would watch Ring of Honor main events, when I would go to the buildings back in the day, and it's like, that would be the perfect moment for the match to end, but then somebody kicks out. And then it goes on for another 2 minutes, and it's like, they didn't have to go another 2 minutes. The match should have ended there. There were a couple of moments like that in this match, but I had so much fun watching this, and the crowd was into it, and these guys were just kicking all kinds of ass that I just didn't mind it. This was a lot of fun. And what it also did, this match established Dante Fox as a player on this show. This established him as somebody to watch. I just thought this was just a ton of fun. And unlike the White Rabbit guys, Dante Fox actually won in his singles debut here on this show, which is even better. We had Johnny Mundo meeting with Dario in his office, complaining about Angelico returning last week and wiping him out and all of his boys out in the Aztec Warfare match with that crazy balcony dive, or as Angelico calls it, a typical Wednesday night. Mundo says that he had his lawyer take out a restraining order on Angelico. And the two of them, him and Dario, call each other names back and forth under their breath. And they have this funny music playing in the background the entire time. It was like something out of a sitcom or a comedy. I liked this, though. I thought it was kind of fun. And I enjoyed Dario's interplay with almost every single person on the show. No matter who walks into his office. And God knows everybody and their mother walks into this guy's office. So I enjoy it. If Dario's doing something on camera, chances are I'm enjoying the hell out of it. It also lightened the mood up a little bit. You know, this is a very serious show most of the time, and so it was kind of nice to have a little bit of comedy there. And Dario, when Mundo closes the door and leaves the office, Dario just goes, "What a prick!" So then Black Lotus, she's up next into Dario's office. She comes in. This guy desperately needs a lock on that door. So she says that she and her Black Lotus triad want Pentagon Dark, who they helped eliminate from Aztec Warfare last week. There's four of them. There's Black Lotus, and then there were the three other women. So I wonder, how does that make them a triad? It's weird. Like, whenever I hear the word triad, it reminds me that there was once a faction in WCW, which is easy to forget, that there was a faction in WCW once called the Jersey Triad with DDP, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Chris Kanyon, which is very easy to forget. It's also funny that Kanyon was part of the Jersey Triad, even though he was from New York. I don't quite get that. I personally don't know anybody from New York who would want to claim they were from Jersey unless they were, but that's just me. So Dario makes a gauntlet match for next week with Pentagon taking on the entire Black Lotus tribe. Johnny Mundo and Sexy Star for the Lucha Underground Championship here in the main event. Not a great match. The match itself was not great. The outcome was exactly what it had to be. But not a great match. Sexy hit a double foot stomp, which is the move that she used to beat Mil Muertes, which just sounds ridiculous saying it. Thankfully, Mundo kicked out. Mundo ends up outside the ring. Sexy Star hits him with a cannonball senton off the apron. Johnny Mundo crawls around a little bit. He sees a fan in the crowd with a crutch. He grabs the crutch from the fan. Fan falls down on the floor. Sexy Star cuts him off, though, grabs the crutch and swings the crutch at him, but Mundo ducks it. He gets back into the ring. She goes to bring the crutch with her inside. The referee won't have any of it. She's like, you can't take that inside. And so, as the referee, I think the referee took the crutch and was taking it away. Sexy goes back out of the ring because she sees the fan on the ground. She wants to go help this woman, this fan that, Mundo took the crutch away from. And as she's trying to help this person who has a mask on, so we can't see who it is, the woman hauls up and punches Sexy right in the head with a pair of brass knucks. And Johnny gets her in the ring. He hits a comically awful-looking end of the world for the win. I mean, seriously, he barely got his arm out to touch this woman. If he didn't get his arm out, I don't think he would have made any physical contact on that move at all. That move just looks so bad. I mean, I guess when he's in the air flipping and twisting, it looks cool. But just as a finishing move, it's absolutely ludicrous. But he wins. And in doing so, Johnny Mundo is now your new Lucha Underground champion. Sexy Star goes down in history as a transitional champion. All is right with the world, and as I said, I always trust the Lucha Underground writers to do the right thing. And the right thing was to get that title off of Sexy Star as quickly as possible. Her reign lasted all of 1 week, and I don't, you know, some of you may disagree with me, and I don't care, but that's 1 week longer than it should have been. And he also beat her, you know, Johnny Mundo is now 2-0 against Sexy Star. He's, the only man to have beaten her both for the Gift of the Gods title and now the Lucha Underground title. And by the way, the woman under the mask did reveal herself. She pulled the mask off after and revealed herself to be Taya. Not very surprising there. So now Sexy Star can feud with Taya. And who knows, maybe Angelico will get the next title shot against Johnny Mundo. I think that'd be a hell of a match. All right, we got a big mailbag this week and a sad tweet, so let's get to it. This week's Magic Mailbag is sponsored by Pro Wrestling Magic, which is gearing up for its biggest show of the year, Sunday, December 11th, Kingdom Come, with the main event of JT Dunn against Cody Rhodes with his lovely wife Brandy in his corner. You may have seen a photo floating around on, I think I saw it on Facebook, in our group, of JT Dunn from their last show debuting some new trunks with Brandy's face on them, a la Rick Rude back in the day. Now him and Cody will go on to face each other one-on-one on December 11th. Plus, you'll get to see a four-team tag team title TLC match, the return of Joey Ryan, Paul London challenging Leo Rush, and a lot more. That's a hell of a card right there. So 106 Bergen Avenue in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. Special start time of 4 p.m., go to WrestlingIsMagic.com, and if you use the promo code SOLOMONSTER, not only are you going to get $3 off your ticket, but if you are among the first 10 Sound Off listeners to use that code, you'll also get a free meet and greet with Brandy Rhodes. So that includes a photo op and an autograph. So just use the promo code SOLOMONSTER, go to WrestlingIsMagic.com for more details. Take advantage of that. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. This comes from Mark, with no city listed here. What do you think of the idea that the fans are hypocrites for cheering for Goldberg while turning on guys like Batista and Roman Reigns? I got a couple of questions asking me something similar. There was a thread in our Facebook group about that also. So here's the thing. Look, I don't agree with booing Roman Reigns. I mean, personally, I don't have a problem with Roman Reigns. I would not, if I was at the show, be standing up booing Roman Reigns. People are entitled to cheer and boo whoever they want. I wouldn't do it personally, but again, the fans can do whatever they want. I don't boo him. I like the guy. But the reason Goldberg is as over as he is because A, he is the product of a time that has been glorified in wrestling. Okay, how many times has WWE put together these commercials and these DVDs and these network specials, and they talk about the Attitude Era, and they talk about the Monday Night Wars. Monday Night Wars this, the Monday Night Wars that. It's like this great period of prosperity and greatness in pro wrestling. He was a big part of that. he was a big part of WCW's dominance over WWE. Him and Sting and DDP and all those guys. I mean, he was a big part of that. So, you can deny it all you want to, but a big part of this is nostalgia. And nostalgia only gets you so far. So that's part of it. But also, Goldberg has been protected in a way since he came back that he was not when he first came to WWE. And protected in a way that very few other guys on the main, if anyone, on the main roster is. Right? No bullshit comedy. None of the usual nonsense guys like Reigns have had to put up with. But here's the other thing that people don't get. Okay? I want to focus on the Batista thing. So that's the deal with Roman Reigns. On the Batista thing, the Batista thing doesn't show me shit. And here's why. The only reason fans turned on Batista is because of Daniel Bryan. That is it. They made a connection with Bryan for whatever reason. They wanted to see him succeed, and they wanted to see him get his revenge on the Authority. They wanted him to win the Royal Rumble, and they wanted him to go to WrestleMania because that was the natural progression of the story that was being told, or so we thought the story that was being told. Even if that wasn't the intended story with the intended finish, that's how people saw it. That's what people wanted to see. Okay? And once they realized that that wasn't what WWE had in mind, they rebelled and Batista got caught in the crossfire. They resented him for taking Bryan's spot, which wasn't his fault at all. It wasn't Batista's fault, but that's what happened. He was a victim of timing. He was a victim of circumstance. He was an innocent bystander. Now, if Batista had come around now and it was Batista against Brock Lesnar, the fans would be going nuts. They'd be going nuts for the guy. He'd be getting reactions as almost as big, if not as big, as what Goldberg is getting. Now, the good thing for WWE is that, you know, and this is kind of a twisted thing here, but the good thing for WWE is also a bad thing, which is that right now they don't have a Daniel Bryan on the roster. They don't have anybody on the main roster, and it's not Sammy. It could be Sami Zayn. It could be this guy. It could be that guy. It's not Zayn. It's not James Ellsworth. There is nobody who I look at right now on that roster who is in that same mode, the underdog who makes that connection with the fans, where he comes out every week and the fans are chanting his name or putting their fingers up in the air or starting this online movement or what have you. They don't have a Daniel Bryan right now. There is nobody on the main roster who the fans have connected with the way that they did with Bryan in 2013. Dean Ambrose is very well liked. Seth Rollins is very well liked. People love Chris Jericho. They love The List. They probably love The List more than they do Jericho. I said it last week. The List is probably the most over thing in the company, but The List is not a person. The closest thing now is Goldberg. So there's no perception right now that Goldberg is taking someone else's spot. He's muscling in and taking a spot that belongs to this guy. Whose spot is he taking? You don't have that problem right now, so the fans aren't revolting against the guy. They're actually welcoming him. They're hungry for a guy like him to come along. They're just begging to get behind somebody. And Goldberg, unlike Batista a couple of years ago, Goldberg is the beneficiary of this timing. And I say they're not revolting against him, not yet. Let's give it some time. It might still happen. But, you know, now that he announced that he's going after the championship, you know, we'll see if that changes. I don't think it will. I think people are going to be as into him at the Rumble as they were at Survivor Series. You know, people want someone that they can get behind. So I don't buy that the fans are hypocrites when it comes to Batista. You can make the argument with Reigns. With Batista, there is no argument. That is the only reason why he got booed and things didn't work out the way they were supposed to. It has nothing to do with the fans being hypocrites. Matt from Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Given that Goldberg just destroyed Brock Lesnar, what are your thoughts on a possible Goldberg versus Undertaker match for WrestleMania 33? Both were known for undefeated streaks. Just their entrances alone make the hair on my arms stand up. Well, the entrances would be the best part of the entire match. I don't think it would be a good match at all. But then again, you could say the same thing about Undertaker and Sting, and that was a match that I advocated for. The best part of Undertaker and Sting, let's be honest, it would have been the entrances. I don't think the actual match would have been very good at all. And much like Undertaker and Sting, Undertaker and Goldberg is a big match. But I think it's a terrible matchup at this stage of the game for both of these guys. You know, Undertaker and Sting, when I was talking about that match going back a couple of years, my idea for it was to essentially make it a double retirement match. So going in, you know that it's the last match for both guys. It's like their big send-off. Only one can win. Who's it going to be? First time ever match between them. That's what made it such an attraction. And then Undertaker would win, they would shake hands, and they would ride off into the sunset. In this case, I think it is a bad matchup, especially for the Undertaker. The guy is in rehab right now, as we speak, for hip surgery that he had recently. So we know how banged up the Undertaker has been for a long time, but he is rehabbing from hip surgery. We don't even know for sure if he'll be ready to go in any physical capacity at the Rumble, let alone WrestleMania. But he is beat up, and I think that is part of the reason why guys like John Cena and AJ Styles are safe opponents for him, who can bounce all over the place for him, make him look like $1 million, protect him and keep him safe and not go out there and be rough on him or hurt him or anything like that. And those are still big matches. Undertaker and John Cena at Mania is a match we've never seen at Mania before. And John Cena is in a very different place now than he was in 2003 when they last wrestled a singles match. John Cena now is a much bigger star. And AJ Styles, if they can pull that match off of the Rumble, I think could be a hell of a match. So I would save Goldberg for the rematch with Brock. I just don't think he's a good match for The Undertaker. Alvin from California, I wanted to ask your opinion about NXT after the match between Shinsuke Nakamura and Samoa Joe. After seeing Shinsuke getting a Uranage twice on the ring steps, is it worth brutal matches like that in NXT to risk them not getting to the main roster? We've seen past injuries that could have ended their career or already have ended their careers in the case of someone like Corey Graves and even someone like Hideo Itami. Hideo got bit by the injury bug. He should be back soon, but it's been a rough go for him. Graves, of course, had the concussions, and so his career came to an end. Although Graves did come from the independent scene, but Graves didn't come in with the same kind of pedigree that Joe or Nakamura did. Those big takeover matches don't bother me because they're big events in like 10 or 15,000 seat buildings, which is what these guys should be wrestling in. So they're exposed to a pretty big audience, I think. What bothers me is when I see pictures of Nakamura or Joe wrestling at one of these live shows in Florida in front of 250 people. That to me is a complete waste. It was at one of those shows where Tommy took that bad snap power slam and almost broke his neck. Now, no offense to the 250 people in Florida there, but these guys, they're 35, 36, 37 years old. They've got high profiles in many cases from where they came from in Japan or TNA or ROH or wherever. What are these guys doing wrestling in front of 250 people when they should be wrestling in front of 10 or 12,000? That's what bothers me, especially when the two main event brands could really use guys like that right now. It's not like, man, the Raw and SmackDown rosters are so stacked with star power right now, we just have no room for these guys. Bullshit. Bullshit. Both brands, Raw and SmackDown, could benefit from having a Joe or a Nakamura right now. And so that's what bothers me more than anything else. Jason from Juneau, Alaska. Just got done listening to episode 470, and as you were discussing the possibility of guys like Joe, Nakamura, and The Revival moving up, you also voiced concern about NXT having to reload. Got me thinking that this might be a path back for guys like Drew Galloway, EC3, and the Hardys, along with other newer talent. What do you think are the chances of that happening? Well, I mean, look, never say never, right? What are the rumors that Triple H is interested in Matt Hardy? And Triple H, of course, is running the show down there at NXT, so I don't know if he would have him in mind for that or the main roster. I never thought I would see James Storm making appearances in NXT or Bobby Roode in NXT. So, again, I won't say that it can happen, but with TNA getting funding behind it again, and I can't even believe that. I mean, Dixie Carter must have been born with a horseshoe up her ass the way she keeps finding ways to survive. But given that, I don't see those guys willing to jump back to WWE so quickly if they can get a sweet money deal down there. At least not Galloway or EC3. I seem happy where they are, and I wonder if they still harbor some ill will towards WWE for misusing them, but the Hardy deals, I think, are up in a few months. At least that's what I remember hearing. I think February, maybe, is when their deals are up. It'll come down to money, I mean, as everything does, But if WWE could get the Hardys back, I think they would be nuts to have them anywhere but the main roster. especially with this brand split. They need guys. They need stars. The Hardys are stars. People still see them as stars. You know, the brilliance of Broken Matt deserves a much bigger audience than the one it has now. So, selfishly, I would love to see him come over to WWE, but I said this many, many weeks ago, months ago, I think, when I was talking about the rumors of Triple H being interested in Matt Hardy. I would love to see him in WWE, but only if he can get assurances in writing that he would have a certain level of creative freedom over that character. I would hate for him to come over and sign a big money contract, but essentially sign all of that creativity and all of, you know, everything about that character and all of those characters. They've created this little Hardy universe for themselves, and I would hate for them to basically take that and gift wrap that and hand it to WWE's creative forces there, because that doesn't really give me a lot of confidence. So if I were him, I would want some assurances about that before I even think about signing. But it's, I mean, hell, if he can pull that deal off, I'd love to see him come over. But I think it's much bigger than NXT. I think it could be much bigger than that. Vince from Rusev's home country of Bulgaria. With the loss of the Revival in Toronto, would it be a good idea to bring them up as part of a Four Horsemen-like faction with Ric Flair and Arn Anderson as their manager? The other horseman could be Bobby Roode as the top heel, and Cesaro or Austin Aries or Curtis Axel as the strong or cowardly mid-carder. What do you think? I hadn't thought of them as a faction, but, you know, I have to say, if they were to do a Four Horsemen type faction, and I wouldn't call them the Horsemen, and I wouldn't have Ric Flair or Arn Anderson have anything to do with it, but Bobby Roode would fit that group to a T. I think that's perfect. And I would go with Aries as the smaller, cocky one, almost like the Tully Blanchard of the group. Plus, him and Roode have a history together. I've wanted to see the two of them get back together ever since Roode came into NXT. So Roode, Aries, and the Revival as a group works for me. I like that a lot. Now we just have to come up with a name for him. I'm thinking maybe, the Glorious Four or something along those lines. I'm sure you guys can come up with your own. Tamu from Finland would love to hear your thoughts on this scenario. Say Daniel Bryan has one more match at WrestleMania against The Miz. After the bell rings, Maurice climbs to the ring apron to give Miz a kiss. And as Miz turns to Bryan, he eats a flying knee, and Bryan pins him in 18 seconds. I don't know if WWE would clear Bryan even for that, but if they would, how would you like to see that? I would think it would be a nice final match slash moment for Bryan. Since it was the 18 seconds thing at WrestleMania 28, that pretty much started the yes movement for him. So it would all have come full circle. What do you think? I actually think that's a really clever idea, I have to say. I like it. I like it a lot. But the thing is, I just don't see them clearing him because it would raise too many questions leading into the show that I doubt as a company they would want to deal with. Because from the moment they announce any kind of match for him, I mean, obviously they're not going to tell people, hey, don't worry about it, it's only going to be 18 seconds. Just announcing the fact that they're letting him wrestle again after they made it very clear that for health reasons, they weren't going to do that. I just think that that would raise questions they just would not want to deal with. I mean, look, it's the safest possible match they could have. But they've just been so adamant about him retiring for those reasons, I just can't see them justifying it. But the thing is, like, this feud with Bryan and Miz that's been going on now for a while on SmackDown, it's been building for months. And Miz continues to mock him with the kicks and the drop kicks in the corner. I mean, I guess they're just trying to get heat on Miz for mocking somebody that the fans really like. But if there's no payoff to this, it's like, what's the point? How does Bryan get his revenge unless he trades Miz to Raw and that's his big revenge? I don't know. The only real payoff for me would be Bryan against Miz. But I think what you just proposed would actually be a really clever way of doing that while protecting Bryan. Yaya from Harlem, New York. I read online that Bret Hart punched Shane McMahon in the face in 1997. Do you know anything about this? He punched Vince in the face. I've never, ever heard of him punching Shane in the face. He punched Vince in the face in Montreal after the screw job. Shane was there. Shane was part of that whole contingent in the locker room, as the story goes. He was part of the scuffle that ensued right after the punch. I know Jerry Briscoe, this was like a comedy of errors. So like Jerry Briscoe accidentally stepped on Vince's ankle and he, I don't know if he sprained it or he almost broke it. that was as they were literally dragging Vince out of the dressing room, and the British Bulldog hurt his knee. I think actually the Bulldog either grabbed Shane or Shane ended up on the Bulldog or something happened there, and Bulldog tweaked his knee pretty badly. He had already taken off his knee brace. He was wearing a knee brace, if you remember, on that pay-per-view. And he had already taken it off by the time this all went down. I mean, this was the end of the show. And so he got hurt, too. It's like, you know, that's one of those scenes that I wish somebody had gotten on film. Or I could be a fly on the wall. It's just incredible what happened that night. Kent from Philly, I read somewhere that WWF was interested in bringing in Chris Benoit as Owen Hart's tag team partner for WrestleMania 11 and calling them the Ace of Spades to complement Owen's King of Hearts gimmick. Is there any truth to this rumor? That is the first I have ever heard that rumor. Doesn't mean it's not true, but I've never heard that before. It could have been discussed. I'd be kind of surprised if it wasn't. I mean, I know Benoit worked some tryout matches for WWE in 95. That was the same year. So he worked tryout matches and dark matches for them in 95. I think he worked one against Owen Hart that year. And I know there's a picture I remember seeing floating around of Benoit walking to the ring with Ted DiBiase as his manager. DiBiase was doing the whole Million Dollar Corporation thing at the time. He was managing a whole bunch of guys. So I don't know if that was just, hey, let's put DiBiase with him and see how it goes, and maybe we'll have Benoit join the corporation. Obviously, they never signed him. They didn't have any interest in him, or if they lowballed him and Benoit had a better offer, I don't quite know what happened there. But I know that picture is floating around somewhere. As far as them being a team, though, I just never heard that before. Brianna from Jackson, Mississippi. I was listening to an interview with Jim Cornette about the Ultimate Warrior, and Cornette claims Warrior once broke Bobby Heenan's neck, but never apologized for it. I know of Heenan's history with neck issues, including how he once dropped an F-bomb on live TV when Brian Pillman grabbed him from behind, but I always was under the assumption that Heenan's neck issues stemmed from a botch spot while wrestling with All Japan. Was the Warrior truly responsible for Heenan's bad neck? No, Heenan hurt his neck in Japan. He did one of those RF video shoots a long time ago. He claimed it happened in a match. I think it was Haku and Onita, I want to say. It might have been a tag team match. Heenan might have actually been wrestling that night. Now, that's not to say the Warrior didn't make the neck worse. You know, Bobby, in interviews, has complained many, many times about how reckless the Warrior was. And the two of them had a bunch of weasel suit matches. They went up and down the towns wrestling each other. So poor Bobby Heenan had to wrestle the Ultimate Warrior night after night in these weasel suit matches. And when he wasn't wrestling the Warrior, let's say that the Warrior was wrestling Rick Rude or Haku or somebody like that. Bobby was at ringside. I'm sure Bobby was taking bumps, right? He was getting pulled into the ring. He was taking press slams. Maybe he was being thrown out of the ring. And Bobby took some pretty big bumps, too. I mean, if you remember him bumping for Hogan back in the 80s, he would take these exaggerated... He was like the Mr. Perfect of managers. I mean, when it came to his bumping ability and just diving over the top rope and stuff when he would get thrown out of the ring. So I believe it, you know, 100% that he probably got banged up a lot working with the Warrior. But as far as the Warrior breaking his neck, I mean, I didn't hear what Cornette said. And I know him and Cornette are friends. So I'm not calling him a liar, but the first story you mentioned is the accurate one. I mean, that's really where he broke or hurt his neck originally. It was in the 80s in Japan. But again, the Warrior, I'm sure it was no day at the park wrestling the Ultimate Warrior back then. The guy was a freaking maniac. That's a big part of what made him so cool to watch when I was a kid. The colors and everything. I mean, I'll never forget though. I'll never forget this. One of the funniest things I've ever seen, and I so hope the match is still online. If it is, it may be on Daily Motion if you want to look for it. It was the Ultimate Warrior and the Legion of Doom against all three members of Demolition. It was a match, like a house show match, I think, at Madison Square Garden. Warrior's out last, making his entrance. He's sprinting to the ring, and as he comes around the aisle, so he comes down, and it's a short aisle, it's Madison Square Garden. As he's rounding the corner, he's, you know, when Warrior would come to the ring, he would just do laps around the ring, right? He was running like a maniac. As he comes around, he starts to circle, and he just steamrolls over a cameraman at ringside. I mean, he absolutely barrels this guy over. Doesn't slow down. It's like, if you're in a car and you run something over, or you hit like a big speed bump or something, right? You might slow down or be like, oh, what the hell was that? Not the Warrior. The Warrior was going 100 miles an hour. He hit something on the road and he just kept going. This was a hit and run. And the guy, I swear to God, you could literally see the cameraman's body go one way and his hair go the other way. It was the funniest thing. He just collapsed to the ground. Even Howard Finkel, who was in the ring doing the ring introductions, Fink had to jump out of the ring to go check on the guy. He saw what happened. I could laugh about it now because the guy got up. I mean, he seemed to be okay, but that's just how the Warrior was. He was just a million miles a minute, nothing but just intensity and whatever the hell else was coursing through the guy's veins. God only knows. That's just how he was. I mean, I had tears in my eyes the first time I ever saw that. It is the funniest thing. So I absolutely believe that the Warrior hurt Bobby or hurt his neck worse, probably aggravated an existing injury, but the initial injury happened in Japan. So you are correct. Johnny from Wynn, Arkansas. TJ Perkins comes out to a video game theme song, Titantron, LED panel, walkway ramp, attire, hairstyle, and so forth. If you could name one video game character he reminds you of, who would it be and why? Video game character that TJ Perkins... TJ Perkins with that hairdo, he kind of reminds me of... I don't even know how to... Maybe something from like Final Fantasy or something. I feel like he reminds me of some character, but it's a character that I never played, and I wouldn't even know what the name of the character is. He looks like one of those... I don't know, like anime, I don't even know. Actually, you know what? You know what character he reminds me of? He reminds me of Luigi from Mario Brothers. Luigi is good, but nobody ever really talks about him. He's just kind of in the background. That's TJ Perkins. Luke from Norristown, Pennsylvania. Do you think Kamala should be in the Hall of Fame? I found out he lost both of his legs due to high blood pressure. Actually, I think it was diabetes. Every time I think of the Golden Era, I always think of Kamala. Do you agree that he should be in the Hall of Fame? I'm not really sure what him losing his legs has to do with him, whether or not he belongs in the Hall of Fame or not. But I say sure. Why not? Put him in. He headlined against guys like Hogan and Andre, right? He was a memorable character, so why not? John from California, buy or sell on the match that could have happened at the time but did not, and which one you wish you could have seen? Bret Hart against Hulk Hogan at SummerSlam 1993, or Randy Savage versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 10? Yeah, you know, the Savage-Shawn Michaels thing, I mean, Lanny Poffo's talked about that before, that Savage in the, the twilight there of his WWE run, when Vince basically was phasing him down and Randy wanted to wrestle more. As Lanny tells the story, Savage pitched an idea for a 2-year program with Shawn Michaels, who was just coming up as like a singles heel. He pitched this idea that would, in the 2-year program would start in 92. It would culminate at WrestleMania 10 in a match that Shawn would win. And so in the end, Savage would put him over and, you know, Shawn would be the next big star. So that's the story that Lanny tells, and I think back to that, and I'm like, man, that would have been pretty cool. I would have loved to have seen that. But Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart, you know, as a kid, when I first became a wrestling fan, Hogan was the shit in WWE. He was the guy. He got me into wrestling, and from there I became a fan of a lot of other guys like Savage and Warrior and Jake and all these different people. And Hogan, obviously, in 93 was at the end of his run in WWE. They were ushering in this new era. Bret Hart was getting he had already been champion. He ended up winning the King of the Ring tournament. And I remember the rumors. And supposedly there were even pay-per-view posters put together. I don't think anybody's ever seen them. The only posters I ever found online showing Bret versus Hogan at SummerSlam were fan-made fakes. So I don't think the actual promotional material was ever released publicly. It may be sitting in a warehouse somewhere. But the idea of doing that match back then in 93, Hogan versus Bret, was very appealing. And I think back to it now, and it's like, that would have been a very interesting match. And I'm not saying that as a wrestling match it would have been better than Savage against Shawn, but it's a match I would love to have seen. And so I have to buy on Bret versus Hogan, and I'm going to sell on Savage and Shawn, not because I didn't want to see that or I wouldn't want to see that, but I can't wrap my head around what kind of match that would have been. Because you have two baby faces. Bret was a baby face. He was beloved. Hogan was, you know, he was being booed by some people, but Hogan was still, you know, the big baby face. That's what he was. He was Hulk Hogan. He was the biggest star. And the idea of putting these two baby faces and Bret being a smaller guy, putting them against each other in a match in the main event of SummerSlam, I wonder what the crowd reaction would have been. Because, you know, the wrestling crowds back then were very different than the wrestling crowds now. Now you have the dueling chants and all that. I don't think you would have gotten that back in 93, but who would have been booed and who would have been cheered? Because someone was going to get more cheers than the other. And I don't know if all of the love for Hogan over so many years would have trumped whatever cheers Bret would have gotten, or if people were so damn sick and tired of seeing Hogan, and they were so ready to embrace somebody new. And I wonder if Hogan knew this, and Hogan worried about that, and it wasn't just, you know, little teeny Bret Hart, I don't want a job to him. I'm sure that was probably as much to do with it as anything, him not wanting to do the job. But I wonder, Hogan's not a dumb guy, and I wonder if he thought this out and said, you know, why am I going to take the chance of walking in there and being embarrassed, sharing in the cheers, or getting some boos, and then Bret looks, you know, Bret ends up coming out of this looking better, and Vince sees this and goes, hey, you know, Bret's, look at the reaction he's getting. Bret's going to be our new guy. I mean, I wonder what was going through Hogan's mind when that match was initially pitched that he supposedly turned it down. I think that would have been quite the spectacle at SummerSlam to put those two guys against each other back then, just for the crowd alone, let alone the kind of match that they would have had. I mean, look, Bret's an awesome wrestler. Bret's my personal favorite. Bret could pull great matches out of almost anyone. Hogan at that point, I think, was, you know, he was capable of having a decent match. I don't think Hogan was having blowaway matches, but I wonder what kind of match that Bret could have pulled out of Hogan. Hogan, I'm sure, would have been extra motivated. It would have been really, really interesting. That's the match I really wanted to see, and it's a shame it never happened, but I'm going to buy on that one. And the last one here, Sam from Toronto. Buy or sell on the bigger comeback in 2016, Chris Jericho or Matt Hardy? That's a good one. That is a good one. You know, Jericho is going to go down as just one of the best. When you really look at the body of this guy's career, how long he's lasted, how he's been able to reinvent himself. Very few people have been able to do what he's been able to do. The Undertaker is another example of one. Guys who just constantly are reinventing themselves. Jericho can be a babyface. He can be an even better heel. He can be a more serious guy like he was in 08. He can be a comedy figure, which I think he's been for a good part of his career doing the comedy stuff. But I look at Jericho, and Jericho is the absolute best part of Raw these days. Him and Owens together, but Jericho and The List and all that, it is the highlight of Raw every single week on a show that doesn't have very many highlights. And Jericho, after how many years he's been doing this now, in 2016 going into 2017, is the highlight of the show every single week. But here's the thing with this. The top spot, the main event, is not a spot that's foreign to Jericho. So as good as he's doing now, and he's buddies with the WWE Universal Champion, and I don't know that, yeah, we can easily buy Jericho being in main events, being in a pay-per-view main event, maybe challenging Owens at some point for the championship. Nobody would bat an eyelash because Jericho has been in plenty of main events before. First ever undisputed champion, all that stuff, right? It's not a spot that he's unfamiliar with. Matt Hardy, on the other hand, has never been as popular ever as he is today. Jericho has had, you know, points where he's been very popular. He's been a world champion. He's been phased down. Then he's phased back up. Matt Hardy has had opportunities. I know in TNA, he's been their champion before. I'm not even going to count the other stuff he's done in TNA and his first run in TNA, which didn't end very well. If you think back to his days in WWE, the closest he ever got to having like a real kind of headline program was the stuff with Edge. And he was made to look like a fool at every turn in that feud. But that was probably as close as he's ever come. right now what he's doing with the Broken Matt stuff, I mean, he is as popular now as he's ever been. And that's why I got to buy on Matt Hardy. I'm going to buy on Matt. I'm going to sell on Jericho. I'm buying on Matt because he has managed to do something that I never thought he would do. And that is become more popular than his brother. Broken Matt is far more popular right now than Brother Nero. Brother Nero is part of Matt's world. He is part of Matt's, you know, he is a bit player in this universe that Matt Hardy has created for himself. And that popularity transcends TNA. You've got people chanting delete, delete, delete at WWE shows. And what it's also done is it's allowed Matt to take this broken brilliance of his to indie promotions all over the country. So he's an attraction now. If I'm an indie promoter and I can get Broken Matt Hardy to come in for a show, I'm paying top dollar. I'm paying premium dollar to get this guy in because this guy is one of the hottest things in wrestling right now. And it's allowed him to go all over the country and make a living with it and go all over the world. He's in the UK, I think, this week for a match against Bully Ray at one of the What Culture shows. It's just amazing to see what Matt Hardy has been able to do with this. And one of the reasons earlier I talked about him, you know, when his contract is up with TNA, I'd love to see him give WWE a shot if he can maintain some of that creative freedom. Otherwise, don't bother. But if he can, the stuff he's doing now deserves a much bigger audience than it's getting. And it's entertaining as all hell, and I hope he gets that chance. But I look at what he's done, and I think when this year is over and you're looking for an MVP in wrestling, I mean, you could look at WWE and say, who's the MVP for the year? AJ Styles. You can pick your MVPs in different promotions. When I look at, I don't know, maybe MVP isn't even the right word. Maybe it's most improved. Maybe it's the biggest surprise of 2016. But when this year is over and the story is told, Matt Hardy has got to be at the head of, you know, at least one of those lists. And I don't know that coming into this year, anybody would have predicted that. I wouldn't have. I don't think there's a single person listening to this right now when this year started and everybody was making their predictions and looking into their crystal ball who would have said, this is going to be the year of Matt Hardy. Believe me, there was nobody saying that. And that's a credit to him. That's a credit to him and what he's been able to accomplish here. So that wraps up the mailbag. Before we end here, though, I want to do a sad tweet. There were actually a bunch of options for sad tweet this week. I mentioned the Cesaro thing earlier during the Raw review. But this one involves Tyson Kidd. Tyson Kidd, of course, who has been out of action for probably a year and a half or almost a year and a half now. I think it was July of last year when he suffered that injury in the match against Samoa Joe. So on occasion, he'll answer fan questions on Twitter. And he's been getting a lot of questions, I guess, about Total Divas because him and Natty were a staple of a lot of the earlier seasons of Total Divas. The new season is about to begin or has already begun. And he was getting questions about it here. And he posted a couple of very interesting tweets this week. And I want to bring them up here if I can. So the first question he got was, where is Kidd? At Kidd WWE. So I guess Total Divas must have just started already. And people were wondering, where is he? Where is this guy? And so he responded. He said, I've been taken off the show by WWE. You'll have to contact them to figure it out. You won't see me once this season. It's all good. And then in a subsequent tweet, somebody sent to him saying, oh, your situation was something I was hoping would be explained this season on the show. He responded and said, oh, believe me, I don't think they want my situation explained. I will leave it at that for now. So very cryptic tweets, very sad tweets to see that this is kind of the situation, what it's come to here. It's really a shame what happened to Tyson Kidd, especially after he sort of reinvented himself. Him and Natty both. I mean, you know, she's doing her thing right now on SmackDown, but she wasn't really doing much of anything before that. And I think it's very easy to forget, in light of what happened to this guy, that him and Natty both, with their work down in NXT, they completely reinvented themselves. They made themselves relevant. They made themselves interesting. Their work, his work in the ring at NXT was second to none. If they would have turned around and put the NXT championship on Tyson Kidd and had him working with some of the newer guys to kind of put them over and whatever, I wouldn't have minded. Now, if it were almost anybody else from the main roster being sent down to NXT, I would have said, hell no, I don't want you to put the NXT title on them. Why are you bringing all these guys down from the main roster? They started to do that, and then they backed off. They had Titus O'Neil wrestle a terrible match in NXT. I think against Sami Zayn. One of the few times Sami Zayn had a bad match on NXT. And they sent a couple of other people down there, here and there. But Tyson was tearing it up in NXT. You know, we were working with guys like Neville and Sami Zayn. And then he came back to the main roster and he capitalized on that momentum. He started teaming up with Cesaro. He started to get more opportunities. And him and Cesaro were tearing it up as a tag team. And then, boom, the injury happens. And it was a significant injury. I mean, it was a very, very, very serious injury to the point where he should probably be dead right now. 5% of people with that same injury survive. 95% of the people who have that injury do not survive. And he was part of the lucky 5%. But there is more to the story that has not gotten out. Yeah, I was told by someone who I consider to be reliable what that story is. It would certainly help explain why you will not be seeing him on Divas anymore. Out of respect, I won't say more than that, but I suspect that, especially based on that last tweet he posted, it will all be public in due time anyhow. So if you have questions for the mailbag, you can keep sending them in to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Follow me on Twitter @solomonster is my handle. You can also take advantage in the final days here of our 20% off Black Friday sale on ProWrestlingTees.com, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. You can buy a shirt in our store, 20% off every single order. Now through Tuesday at noon Eastern. So get those orders in and take advantage of that. We'll be back next weekend for episode 472. We'll have TLC predictions on that show and all the other late-breaking news in this wonderful, wacky world of wrestling. I appreciate all of your help and support in making the podcast what it is today. Don't forget, you can leave some love and some feedback on the show in iTunes and on Stitcher. We are a 5-star rated podcast. You can rate the show. You can leave a review of the show on there, and that is another way to show your support. So until next weekend, be well, stay safe. I will see you right back here next weekend, the first December show, as we wind down 2016. And until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off. What?
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the big show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Solomonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.